Did you know that the first computer ever assembled was put together at the University of Pennsylvania in 1946? It was as large as a boxcar, weighed 30 tons, had 40 units in 9-foot tall black cabinets. It had 18,000 vacuum tubes that created so much heat that they had to bring in industrial-sized fans to keep the whole thing from melting down. And the purpose of this first computer was to take a million cards to simulate basically what would be the devastating results of the hydrogen bomb. And that's why it was put together. From that time to the present, some 50 years, we have taken that technology and reduced it down to the size of a 1/4-inch silicon chip in just 50 years. The advance of information and technology in our generation, in our lifetime, is just absolutely amazing. In 1990, pollster George Barna said that the access that we have to information in the world in 1990 was only 3% of what we would have by the year 2010. Just 20 years. From 1990 to 2010, just 3% of the information in the world being available to us. And it seems to me that in this kind of a world, if a person is going to get by, information and access to information, knowledge has got to be the key, doesn't it? I mean, let's face it, our president, the education president, has told us that every child must be connected to the internet and be accessible to the World Wide Web by the age of 13, or else they're considered underprivileged, because access to information is what's king. And if a person is going to live the good life today, you've got to have knowledge, because knowledge is power. You've got to have access to information. You've got to be connected to the networks and sources of technology that will get you where you need to go. Isn't that correct? Doesn't the good life consist of information? Let me suggest to you this morning that that may not be true. It may be that the people who have the good life because they are people who live the good life. In other words, there's a difference between information and the application of information. There's a difference between technology and knowledge and the application of knowledge. Which brings us to our study this morning. We are going to begin to look at the place in the Bible that gives the most time and attention to the whole concept of how to live well. And that is the book of Proverbs. Because the book of Proverbs lays out the wisdom of God in bite-sized, simple form, so that we can take it, we can understand it, and we can move forward. And over the course of the next couple months, we're going to open this book, and we're going to learn an awful lot about the reality of the world we live and about the people who live in our world. To be honest with you, this message that I'm preaching this morning is not the one I wanted to preach. The one I wanted to preach was the one I'm going to preach next week. But you know what? As I meditated and studied and evaluated not only what the Bible says, but where we are as a culture, I came to the conclusion that when it comes to the book of Proverbs, most of us feel like, so what? Most of us don't value wisdom. That's not a priority to us. So I'm going to preach a message to you this morning to try to convince you of the value of wisdom. If we were really honest with us, most of us would say, well, if you're going to tell me how to be happy, I'm tuned in, because I want to be happy. That's important to me, my happiness. Many of us, if I were to tell you how to get rich, you'd say, man, I'm tuned in, because that's important to me, to make money. But to be wise, now, is that really something that I need? The answer to that question is yes, because the quality of your life in this world and in the world to come will be directly related to your wisdom quotient. Not your IQ, your WQ. So we're going to look at the book of Proverbs this morning. And if you'll open to Proverbs chapter 1, we're going to look at the first 9 verses. In verse 1 we see the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. Now this is a collection of wise proverbs, mostly compiled by Solomon, though there are several other writers that contributed to this, and they were collected and put in this book called the Book of Proverbs. Now this book is very important to me, it's very special to me. Last year, I read through the book 12 times. There's 31 chapters in the book, and if you were to take a chapter a day, you would read through the book once a month. And I read through the book 12 times. It was very, very helpful for me as an individual. For example, today's the 5th, right? The 5th? So today you'd be reading chapter 5 if you read through the book. And next month you'd read chapter 5 on the 5th, and it's a real easy system to keep up with. And it was so helpful to me that I began to start a study with my kids. The two of my kids and I meet on Thursday mornings, and we just take a chapter a week, read through the chapter, and talk about it. And we've had some incredible conversations just evaluating wisdom and how much we need it. Now, you might ask the question, what is a proverb? What is a proverb? And you'll notice as you begin to read through this that proverbs are short, pithy statements, usually in the form of a couplet. That is, two lines, and those lines relate to each other in some way that helps us understand the meaning or the wisdom that's contained there. The word proverbs itself is simply a word that means comparison. What proverbs are, it is a collection of sayings that when people compare life and compare the options of life, the ways of doing things, there are certain things that are good and certain things that are bad, certain things that are true and certain things that are false. And each one of these proverbs captures a snapshot of the wisdom of life in this world. And so that's what basically a proverb is. As you start through the book of Proverbs, you're going to see that there are a number of different kinds of proverbs, and I want to quickly give you some examples of those so you'll have a handle on what you're going to face as you read through the book. The first form of parallelism in Proverbs, that is the parallelism between the first line and the second line, is what we call antithetical parallelism. And the key word is but. For example, in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 1, a wise son heeds his father's instructions, but a mocker does not listen to rebuke. I mean, you'll notice in the parallelism that there's a phrase that makes a statement, but the word but comes in there as a contrast to show that there's an opposite. And you're going to see a lot of proverbs that have this antithetical parallelism. The second type of parallelism is synonymous parallelism. And that's where the second line takes the first line and just adds to it or makes it more clear. And the key word there is and or so. For example, in 14:10, each heart knows its own bitterness and no one else can share its joy. You see here that the second part, the and, really just takes you a little bit further, explains it in a little bit more detail. That's the second type. The third type of parallelism that you're going to see is what we call synthetic parallelism. And you see a couple different key words. The key word better than is comparison or like or so. And synthetic parallelism takes the whole concept and puts it into some kind of a comparative form. For example, I want to look here at 15:17. In 15:17, better a meal of vegetables where there is love than a fattened calf with hatred. See the comparison there? One is much better than the other. Better to eat thin and be happy with the people you're eating with than to eat fat and have a cruddy time, a rotten meal. That's true. Second example of synthetic parallelism is found in 25:25. Like cold water to a weary soul is good news from a distant land. In the same way that cold water refreshes you when you're thirsty, good news from a distant land also refreshes you. Implication, you ought to be a bearer of good news when you have the opportunity. This gives you just a feel for what you're going to face when you get into the book of Proverbs. But what I want to do this morning is I want to give you four reasons why we ought to bother with Proverbs. Four reasons why we ought to bother with Proverbs. The first reason is this. Proverbs provide insight for expert living. Proverbs provide insight for expert living. Notice what he says in verse 2. Solomon writing says, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young, Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. Now, the first reason we study Proverbs is because Proverbs provides insight for expert living. In verse 2, you see the word wisdom. By studying Proverbs, you can attain wisdom. The word wisdom in Hebrew simply means skill. It's used in a number of places. It's used for a craftsman who's very skilled at making things. It's used as a sailor who's very skilled at being able to navigate a ship on the sea. It's used for a wise counselor that can give the king wise advice. It basically means to be an expert. To be an expert. And when it comes to living, Proverbs will help us become experts in the best way to live. Experts give us expertise in the best way to live. In Colson's new book, he quotes a famous theologian, and he says some things that are just absolutely astounding. Listen to what he says. He says, "Wisdom in Scripture is, broadly speaking, the knowledge of God's world and the knack of fitting oneself into it." The knowledge of God's world and the knack, or the expertise, the ability to fit into it. Says Calvin College professor Cornelius Plantinga. He says, "A wise person is one who knows the boundaries and the limits, the laws and rhythms and seasons of the created order, both in the physical and the social world. To be wise is to know reality and then accommodate yourself to it. By contrast, those who refuse to accommodate to the laws of life are not only immoral, but also foolish, no matter how well educated they may be. They fail to recognize the structure of creation and are constantly at odds with reality. Folly is a stubborn swimming against the stream of the universe, spitting into the wind, coloring outside the lines." Precisely. "To deny God is to blind ourselves to reality and the inevitable consequences that we will bump up against reality in painful ways, just as a blindfolded driver will crash into other drivers or run off the road." In other words, what Plantinga is saying here is that God has set forth laws in the universe. He's got a plan for how things are going to work. And the wise person, the expert, understands how things are, understands the reality of life, has a big picture for how things work. And that wise person then can order their life in such a way that they work with God, they work with God's reality, they work with God's laws to see their life work out, to be successful. On the other hand, those people who don't have wisdom, they're constantly running into God's laws, crashing face first into them, and struggling with the consequences. Have you ever thought, why do all these bad things happen to me? If you've ever thought, like, why do things always go wrong in my marriage, with my kids, in my office? Why do things always go wrong for me? You know what that is? That is a sign that maybe you don't understand yet. That you're working against God's order, against God's system, rather than with God's system. Wisdom gives you the ability to work with God's system. You also notice in verse 2, it says this is for attaining wisdom and discipline. The word discipline here means the ability to apply this wisdom in my day-to-day life. In other words, it's one thing to know. It's another thing to have the moral strength to be able to act on what we know. A lot of us understand a lot of truth about God. We just don't have the ability to make ourselves do what we know we need to do. Proverbs will reinforce and help us gain the strength to do the things that we need to do. And notice what happens as a result of that. In verse 3, he says, "For acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair. If you pride yourself in the kind of person who relates to others in a just, a fair, and honest way, you need wisdom." He goes on to say in verse 4, "Giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance." In other words, everybody's included. The simple in this passage refers to those people who just don't have real knowledge. It's not that they're evil in their intent, but they just are gullible, and they need wisdom. Also talks about the young. The young are those people who are between birth and about 21 years of age. And this book will teach you the realities of the world, teach you how to live. For those of you who've gotten crusty, you're old and wise, and you think, I don't need anything. Notice that you're included in this passage too. He says, let the wise listen and add to their learning. One of the marks of a truly wise person is a truly wise person recognizes how little they actually know, and they're very open to listen to other people. When is the last time, a wise one, someone spoke into your life and you allowed that to happen and you sat back and said, you know what? They've got a good point. I need to take that into consideration. You see, if it's been a long time, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, you're not a wise person. Because it says, let the wise listen and add to their learning. A characteristic of a truly wise woman, a truly wise man, is someone who's constantly being taught through the Bible and through the wisdom of other people. He also says in this passage, let the discerning get guidance. No matter how much you know, no matter how far you've come, you always need help. You always need guidance. And let me just say right from the outset that life is dangerous. Life is dangerous. Whether we want to believe it or not, life is dangerous. And because life is dangerous, it's important for us that we become experts in the way we live. For those of you who have taken on the awesome privilege and the awesome responsibility of raising kids, life is dangerous for kids. And your ability to help them discern, to help them be wise, to help them to work through the tough issues of life is very, very important. I think about some of the dangers from without. I think about dangers like pornography that many teenage boys get into and absolutely could take their life and restrict it to a mental image of lust that will plague them and plague them and plague them throughout their life. That's dangerous. That's devastating. That can wreak havoc and consequences in life for years to come. Do we take that seriously, Mom and Dad? Do you know what that's going to do to a future marriage? Do you have any idea? It's dangerous out there. The obvious ones, drugs, alcohol, immoral relationships, all of those things can do long-term, lasting damage to the soul and the conscience of an individual. Not to mention the dangers from within. Anger that's not controlled. Unforgiveness, pride, self-centeredness. All of those things rob us of life. They're risky, they're dangerous, and if we don't teach our children how to live and we don't model how to live and we don't live wisely, we don't have wisdom, the world in which we live is hostile. It's difficult. It will suck you in and it will take you under. It's very important that we become experts in living. So Proverbs provides us insight to become experts in living. Secondly, Proverbs provides discernment for critical thinking. Proverbs provides discernment for critical thinking. Notice what he says in the last part of verse 2. He says, first of all, it's for attaining wisdom and discipline, but secondly, this book was written for understanding words of insight. Now, the word understanding literally means to choose between, to pick between. In other words, there's a lot of words out there, but only some of them are true, and only some of them are insightful. Do you have the ability to sort through all of the noise to be able to discern, to pick truth from error, to pick right from wrong? The book of Proverbs will help you learn how to be critical in your thinking, learn how to see right from wrong. Do you understand when it comes to making a business deal who you need to do business with and who you need to avoid? I'm not talking about the person who's got the best sales pitch, because there are a lot of words out there. But some of you have wrongly chosen your business associates, and it's wreaked all kinds of havoc in your life. Proverbs teaches you how to identify people, who I'm going to live with, who I'm going to work with, and who I'm not. How about picking a spouse? You know, that's based on a lot more than just love, or at least the modern definition of love. Because all of you who have been married for more than a year recognize that the heart doesn't quite beat as fast, that doesn't cover all of the flaws that you have and that you think your spouse has after a couple years go by. Marriage is more than a honeymoon. It's more than the first year. Do you have wisdom when it comes to picking a spouse? Do you have discernment as to the kind of person that you need, the kind of person you're looking for? These are big issues of life. Are you a critical thinker? Do you have the ability to decide? Do your children, are they gaining the insight and the ability to decide in these areas? You see, the ability to pick between truth and error is critical to life. Notice what he says in verse 6. He says, for understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and the riddles of the wise. The sayings and the riddles of the wise, I came across a little riddle that I like, written by Calvin Miller. He said, Sir Isaac Newton sure was smart beneath the apple tree. When one fell off and hit his head, he said, wow, gravity. For Isaac was a genius and not a common slouch. A genius cries, gravity. Most others just say, ouch. You know what? God has placed some people in this world that have an incredible ability to discern. And we need to tap into those people. We need to listen to them. So we need to be able to figure out who they are. And those people who think deeply and understand truth at a much deeper level, those are the wise. Are you connected with anybody wise? Do you know anybody wise? Sometimes we can't even figure out what they're talking about. The social and moral commentators that are helping us discern the cultural trends, that we go willy-nilly down the path. Do you have the ability to do that? Proverbs is going to teach you who to listen to and then how to understand them when you listen to them. And that's an important part of being a critical thinker. There are a lot of conundrums in this life, things that just don't seem to make sense. It's a complex universe in which we live. And if you study the book of Proverbs, it will help you sort out and think through these conundrums of life. The third reason why we should study the book of Proverbs is because Proverbs originate from the source of wisdom. Proverbs originate from the source of wisdom. Look at verse 7. Verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. That's actually the key verse in the book of Proverbs. You can circle it, underline it, star it, highlight it. It is a foundational, fundamental verse to understanding wisdom. Now, what does he mean by the fear of the Lord? The word fear means terror and dread. It also means reverence, respect, and awe. In fact, it's kind of got a twofold meaning. There's a feeling of attraction, of awe, wanting to be close, but there's also a feeling of dread, of fear, of wanting to be far away. Fire has that tendency. When you see a campfire, you feel its warmth, you want to get close to it, you get mesmerized at it, you look into it, it's really cool, you want to get close to it, it's awesome. But if you get too close, or if the fire gets too out of control, you want to stay away from it. It's dangerous, it's frightful. I was driving up 360 this week, and as I came across the 360 bridge, I looked up at the buildings going up on the bluffs there over the 360 bridge, and I thought, what a great illustration of God. You know, for the architect who comes and looks at that place, there's a feeling of attraction, awe. I mean, this place is just gorgeous. It's beautiful up overlooking the lake and overlooking the hill country and up on such a strategic place. I mean, very few places in the world are as beautiful as those bluffs. And so there's a feeling of attraction. There's a feeling of awe. There's a feeling of, I want to be there. I want to be close to that. But the architect also knows that if he is not very careful in how he builds that building, making sure it's anchored, making sure that it's built with the right kind of structure, making sure that all the things that it needs for stability are in place, if he builds it wrong, there's a fear factor, there's a danger. And the very fact that it's awesome, which draws him there, also reminds him that this is a risky place. People could get hurt. This is dangerous up here. It's the same way with God. When we think about the beauty and the perfections of God, when we think about His holiness and His greatness, we are attracted to Him. We are awed by Him. Like looking at the Grand Canyon, we look at His perfections and we see all that God is and we say, man, I want to be close. But then we also recognize that we are sinful people and that what we tend to do are the very things that God stands against. His holiness speaks against our unrighteousness. His love speaks against our self-centeredness. And we recognize that God is a God of judgment, that He judges that type of behavior, that type of sin. And so there's this feeling of wanting to be drawn into God, but this also feeling that I want to shrink away from God at the same time. That's what's contained in the concept, the fear of the Lord. And here's what the writer's saying. He's saying the fear of the Lord, that feeling of wanting to be close, but also recognizing that God's standards are perfect, that I respect Him, that I live circumspect before Him, that those feelings are present. And he says that is the beginning of knowledge. Now, it used to bother me, because I thought the whole book was about wisdom. Why does he say the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge? Because knowledge is basically the ABCs of wisdom, right? You need a little bit of knowledge to begin to build wisdom, but ultimately where we want to be is wisdom. So why does he say the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge? Why doesn't he say the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom? And here's what he's saying. He's saying that you can't even begin to grasp the elementary truths, even have knowledge, until you put God in His proper place. You don't know anything until you fear the Lord and you see God as He is. That's the starting point. That's the beginning. You're not even going to get to wisdom, much less knowledge, if you don't start with a right reverence for God. The source of wisdom comes from God. It comes from His revelation. God has revealed Himself in the world. He says, this is who I am, and this is how the world is made. If you respect that, if you fear that, if you honor that, then you're starting down the right path. But notice what else he says in the verse. He says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools do what? Fools despise wisdom and instruction. You know the word despise means to dismiss offhandedly. Just dismiss it, to belittle it, to mock it, to say that's stupid. And how many people in the world are saying that about God? How many people are saying that the God of the Bible is simply silly? It's a human construct. The God of the Bible doesn't exist. The God that we love is the God of our own making, the God that's comfortable for American culture. And for people to dismiss God, that's foolish. You will never know how to live life unless you fear God. God is the source of revelation. There's a secondary source here too. We see that secondary source in verse 8. He says, listen, my son, to your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. There's also not only the voice of revelation, but there's the voice of experience. Mom and dad. Does that mean mom and dad know everything? Not at all. But if you're a child, if you're a teenager, let me tell you, as dumb as your mom and dad may be, they're infinitely wiser than you. So where does that place you? Anytime you get that thought, my old man is so stupid, you know what you're saying? You're saying that you are really a pea brain. I can't imagine that I believed the things I believed 15 years ago. I just can't imagine I believe those things. I look back and think, man, I was pretty stupid at age 25. Just think how much more ignorant I was at age 15 and age 10. Experience has a way of teaching us about life. And even though mom and dad are not infallible, mom and dad have been placed in the lives of the children to convey a richness of experience, to teach truth. Mom and dad, do you carry that mantle? I'm not talking about stay out of the street. I'm not talking about don't do drugs. I'm talking about something bigger than that. Are you teaching your children how to think wisely? Are you teaching them how God has laid out this universe and the principles and the laws of this universe? That's your responsibility, to pass along your knowledge. Some of you are going to have to be around a little bit more if you're going to be doing that. Those of you who have children that don't want to be around anymore, you're going to have to work doubly hard. And let that be a warning to those who have children who do want to be around. Use your time wisely. Pass along that information. Proverbs will tell us over and over again. Now, remember, this is not my opinion, okay? I'm not one of those 40-year-old guys that doesn't know anything, and I don't remember what it was like to be young. This is what the Bible says. In the book of Proverbs, God's book on wisdom, God says, listen to the instruction of your father and mother. That's important. They can teach you. It's the source of wisdom. In addition to that, the fourth reason is that Proverbs make us look good for goodness sake. Proverbs make us look good for goodness sake. Say, what do you mean by that? Well, notice verse 9. It says, if you listen to your father's teaching, your father's instruction, don't forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. To put this in contemporary terms, they would be some of those little weird plastic clips to adorn your head. And, you know, some kind of a lip ring or, you know, some kind of a body piercing to adorn your face. That would be kind of modern terminology. But, you know, to put it in ancient terminology, which I think is actually more attractive, the garlands would be like flowers on your head and like a gold chain around your neck. In other words, what he's saying, using a proverb here, using figurative language, is it will beautify you. It will make you look good. If you will take the wisdom from God, and you'll take the wisdom from your parents, and you'll apply those things to your life, you know what? Your life will take on a quality of beauty. You'll be attractive to other people. You may not be attractive to the particular peer group that you run with, but you will find over the course of your life that living a wise life, people will be drawn to you because you'll be a person of honesty. You'll be a person of fairness. You'll be a person of compassion. You'll be a person of kindness. You'll be a person of love. You'll be a person who can figure out things. And you know what you're going to find? People are going to come to you because you've got wisdom and they need it. You'll become a very attractive person. And the reason why you become an attractive person is not just so that you will look good, but you'll become an attractive person for the right reasons, for goodness sake, because you'll be good and you'll do the right things. Now, if you're old and you've blown it and you've not demonstrated wisdom, the time is even more pressing for you to get into the book of Proverbs. It's even more important for you to start now. You don't want to wait. Because a wise life comes from the source of this book. About 9 years ago, a family walked into Hill Country Bible Church with two teenagers. And both of those teenagers had looked at the world and saw some things that were attractive in the world. And they walked into our church and they began to decide, these two teenagers began to decide their course in life. As these two teenagers began to decide their course in life, one of them chose the path of wisdom. And the result of those choices is obvious in her life. Here's a person that really gives full time to Christian service, works with our youth ministry, has been a counselor, a guide, a friend, a support to so many kids, helping and encouraging them. Her life has the characteristics of beauty. Now, she and her brother both grew up in the exact same home with the exact same love and with the exact same compassion and the exact same teaching and the exact same care. They got the same training. They got all of it. But her brother chose a different path. He chose to follow a foolish road, the way of the world, through a series of encounters with drugs and alcohol, he got addicted. He spiraled down into depression. And on Thursday of this week, we buried that 25-year-old man. Very sad day. And I stood here and looked down at that casket, and I thought to myself, it did not have to be this way. It did not have to be this way. He had every opportunity to walk with God, to live wisely, but he did not choose the wide path. He chose foolishly. He chose the way of the world, the way of fool. And I think, how many times do I, maybe not in such a graphic, visible, obvious way, but how many times do I rob myself of the good life because I opt for foolishness, for the path of sin, and don't follow hard after God. How many times do you give up a blessing? How many times do you give up an opportunity to shine for God because you don't know what you're doing? You're not wise. You're not listening. You're not tuned in. The book of Proverbs will help you get on the path, stay on the path, and experience life. I would encourage you, take up the challenge. Begin to read the book of Proverbs. Take a proverb a day. It'll take you about 6 minutes a day. You'll find wisdom as we study this book together. Let's bow our heads for prayer. Father in heaven, we just thank you that you give us wisdom. That you've not just created a world, but you've created a world and given us the plan, the information, the guidebook. May we be men and women, children who are committed to learn and live it so that we can experience all that you have for us, the good life, the God life. Father, motivate us to follow hard after you, for we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.